This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
This April, the Association of University Teachers in Britain voted to support an academic boycott of Israel. The purpose of the boycott is to protest the Israeli university's complicity with the occupation and the government policies in the West Bank and Gaza. The boycott has been under increasing attack in the media and from academics around the world, and several days ago the teachers' union announced that it will be reopening debate on the boycott. Tanya Reinhardt is a professor of linguistics at Tel Aviv University who supports an academic boycott of Israel, and she joins me by phone now from Tel Aviv. Good morning, Tanya, and welcome to our program.
Hello. Good to be with you.
Where did the plan for an academic boycott of Israeli universities originate?
As far as I know, it did originate in Britain, and it started in 2002 with a petition organized by British academics calling to suspend European Union funds for Israeli institutions. And there were various big boycott attempts. As far as I know, there was a resolution of a French university, but the major front was in Britain.
And had Palestinian academics played any role in encouraging this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Palestinian academia got organized, and that happened mainly in the last year, and they called the whole international community for a boycott, and I think that was the decisive factor in the British resolution, because before they were talking about just freezing of funds, and now it's a call of a full boycott of two Israeli universities, selective boycott. But I think they were inspired to take a more drastic move by the Palestinian call.
And what is the reasoning behind a boycott? Why a boycott of universities?
The boycott is not a boycott of universities. It's a general boycott. The problem, if you look, of course, obviously for us Israelis, and for me as an Israeli, it's very difficult to speak here in support of a boycott against my people, and naturally in Israel any decision of boycott is arising a huge wave of insult and anger. But if you look on this not from the perspective of us Israelis but of how the world looks at us, then you would see that for Israel has been violating one after the other all international resolutions. So in July 2004, the International Court of Justice in The Hague ruled that Israel must immediately dismantle the parts of the wall that were built on Palestinian land. Israel can build a wall on its own borders, of the 67 borders, if it wants, but the current line of the current route of the wall is a robbery of Palestinian land, and it's a threatening 400,000 Palestinians with forced migration. That was the ruling of the International Court of Justice. But Israel completely ignored this latest resolution, and this is just a continuation of 38 years of ignoring UN resolutions that declared Israeli occupation of Palestine as illegal and demanded that Israel goes back, returns territories that were conquered in 67. So in practice, we Israelis are building up, imprisoning the Palestinians in narrowing prison units in the West Bank, the same way that we did in Gaza already during the occupation. Gaza has become already a big prison, completely disconnected from the world, from the West Bank, from any Arab countries, and completely fenced, and we are doing the same in the West Bank. So the International Court of Justice in its ruling recommended that the United Nations imposes sanctions on Israel if it doesn't implement its ruling. But the Israeli reaction was just ignoring this. What the perspective in Israel is that as long as the U.S. backs us, we can ignore U.N. resolutions because the U.N. will not do anything. So I believe the question for the international community is what to do facing violation of U.N. resolutions, what to do when the institutions that are supposed to keep international law fail to and do not manage to enforce the law. And the model that gave the inspiration for the present boycott is the model that was set up in South Africa. Also at that time, South Africa ignored all UN resolutions, and also then the UN was reluctant in imposing immediate sanctions, and also then because of mainly U.S. and the big powers' opposition. And the model that developed then was that the people of the world can act and take actions when the institutions fail to enforce international law. And the boycott in South Africa started as a grassroots movement of individuals or local organizations. It was very slow to develop. It took a long time. But eventually it became a full boycott of product, sport, culture, academia, tourism, of every aspect of South African life. This eventually also led the international institutions, the UN, to impose sanctions, and eventually South Africa was forced to abrogate apartheid. So this is the model that is now leading the international community, the grassroots organizations that are doing this. It's a general boycott. It's not just a boycott of the universities. There's a boycott of a caterpillar that provides bulldozers that demolish Palestinian houses and build houses and build the wall. There's the attempts at sports boycott, at cultural boycott. So for the academia, because we are now talking about academic boycott, the question is not whether the universities should be particularly targeted, but whether there is anything in about the Israeli universities that justifies that they are being exempt from a general boycott. If there is such exemption, it should be on the basis of the actions of the university. So if you look at individual academics in Israel, many of them do oppose the occupation, but the university as a body has never taken any act to oppose either the occupation or the wall. So, for example, there was never any resolution of any senate in of any university in Israel against the closure of Palestinian universities. And right now, the wall disconnects Palestinian teachers and Palestinian students from their universities, and the education system is largely paralyzed. And even now, there wasn't any university protest against the wall, even. So, in terms of its actions, there is nothing to exempt the academia from a general boycott.
You've spoken and given the reasoning for why there should be no exemptions. The British Association of University Teachers, however, targeted only two specific Israeli universities, Bar Ilan and Haifa. Why particularly did they choose those two universities?
From what I read about this, I read an interview with Sue Blackwell and others. The two universities symbolizes various aspects of the collaboration of the Israeli academia with the university. So the Bar-Ilan University works with the university in Ariel in the territory. So that's a direct participation with the occupation. Haifa University symbolizes the deteriorating freedom, academic freedom in Israeli universities. So Dr. Pape was selected as someone who was really actually persecuted by Haifa University, first for his stance for standards of research. So he's been working on he's one of the new historians that studied the 48 affairs where many Palestinians were expelled, and he defended a student that argued that there was a massacre of Palestinians in Tantura. But the major reason why Pape was persecuted, and he was threatened with his job, it was only international petition and calls and intervention of academics from all over the world that saved his job. But and the major reason was, in fact, that Dr. Pape supported the boycott. He was among the first Israeli supporters of the boycott. So Haifa symbolizes the what happens to academic freedom when you cooperate with the occupation. But I believe that the major the underlying theme beneath the decision of the British teachers organization is that it, so far it's a selective boycott. It's not a sweeping boycott. It's two universities are being targeted in order to signal to the Israeli academia that it's being watched. But it's not yet a sweeping boycott, because it's actually trying to still give the Israeli academia a chance to further itself from the occupation, to stop, to get out of this cycle of passive participation in the occupation.
Now, in Canada and internationally, for sure, in the same way, those who oppose the boycott raise the banner of it's an attack on academic freedom. Why Israel? Why not the United States? They also occupy countries. How do you respond to those points of view?
There are two questions. Academic freedom, yes, it's, of course, any boycott, it's, when it comes to academic, boycott is a very cruel measure, and of course, when it becomes academic boycott, it's going to damage academic research. But this is the line that the international community already accepted as legitimated in the experience of South Africa, and the rationale is that there is no reason why, was then, the rationale in South Africa, there's no reason why the oppressors, the whites, should enjoy academic freedom when the blacks are deprived from any sort of freedom. And the same logic is holding here too. But the other question is much more serious. It is true that Israel is clearly not the worst case of oppression in the world. I mean, we can think about the Russians in Chechnya, but even worse in what the U.S. is doing, what the U.S. did in Fallujah, no Israeli general has ever dared trying. What the U.S. can be marked as a much worse aggressor and violator of international law than Israel. And I believe that the reason why Israel was selected is not because it's the worst state in the world, but because the people who try to enforce the boycott believe there is more likelihood of succeeding in stopping a small country. So by the logic of boycott, the big powers should be boycotted, no doubt about it, but right now it's less realistic. There is more chance to stop a small country than to stop the U.S. But the question is, so obviously it's not choosing the worst but as the target, but you can ask still, so if someone decides, okay, we cannot stop the U.S. now, but let's save the Palestinians. We cannot save the Iraqis. We cannot save the Afghans. We cannot maybe save the Chechens. Let's first save the Palestinians, and let's first stop the war. If someone takes this decision, as the British teachers' organization did, can we say they are immoral for trying to save the Palestinians? Is someone who is trying to save someone now, saving the Palestinians, is he less moral than someone that say, well, let's not attempt to save anyone until we can save everyone? And I believe taking any action to save anybody is a moral action.
What are the challenges for increasing support for the boycott? And as the of course those who have opposed it have compelled a new debate in England and want to reverse that decision there. Is this typical of what we can anticipate in terms of the boycott campaign as a tactic to bring some justice for the Palestinian people?
Yeah, this is the one difference with South Africa. South Africa never had the type of lobby that Israel has. Israel has a very strong lobby, and the Israeli academia, which is usually very indifferent, is getting always on its feet when its own interests are at risk. So while there was never any Senate decision against the closure of academic universities, there was immediately the Inter-Senate Committee of Israeli Universities declared the war on the boycott. On that, they were very quick to take a resolution. And it's a general Israeli strategy to believe that we can solve everything by force. So this has become the Israeli thinking, like the bulldozer type thinking. We can handle it by force. And the Israeli lobby has been very, very forceful. And to take another example, a year ago, the Valencia basketball team decided to declare to boycott Israel as part of the general boycott, and they announced they will not come and play in Israel if the championship league will take place in Israel. And the whole Israeli lobby, and that wasn't academic lobby, but the Israeli lobby, pro-Israel lobby, has used all its arsenal and found all kind of interpretations of contracts and threats, and eventually managed to force Valencia to come play in Israel. Same happened with the boycott. Everywhere the public supporters of the boycott or the divestment in the U.S. or any attempt to put pressure on Israel, the public supporters were targeted one by one. They were found one by one, and they were given lots of trouble in their universities. And the Israeli lobby managed to bitter their lives. So it's possible that they will succeed also in this case. They are trying again to change, to reverse the decision of the professors' organization in England, and it's possible that they will succeed, because this is a very powerful lobby, and it's supported as it is now by the U.S., by the media, mainstream media everywhere, and any criticism of Israel is being silenced as anti-Semitism. So we have to take it as a possibility that they will manage to reverse the decision. But I think the question is not so much about the decision itself, because what cannot be stopped is the fact that people all around the world are being fed up with Israel's ignorance of international law. And individual researchers may still boycott Israel with just learning the lesson that they should not go public about it. They should not sign petitions. They should not share their intentions with the media. But they can just keep what's happening already, boycotting Israeli institutions, not going to institutions to conferences in Israel, not participating in joint institutional research, not participating in promotion procedures. And I myself, I object individual boycott. I think the individual researchers, Israeli researchers, should not boycott abroad. I think I myself only agree with institutional boycott. But in any case, this institutional boycott can go on also without a resolution. And I believe this is already irreversible. I don't think the Israeli lobby can stop the hidden boycott that is already going on of of Israeli universities, as well as other aspects of all aspects of Israeli life.
Well, thank you very much for that positive note that we end on, and for your explanation, and I salute you also for your moral courage in this issue.
Thank you
very much. I've been speaking with Tanya Reinhart. She's a linguistics professor at Tel Aviv University.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.